1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. On the Tuesday edition of the program, the White Sox are okay. Trust me. We'll explain in just a moment. Plus, a brand new interview today with Sam Panionovich, a sports betting analyst for Nesson and Fox Sports and the host of the Chicken Dinner podcast. We talk with him about the White Sox moving forward, the Bears, and what to expect from the NFL draft, plus his new jobs at Nesson and Fox Sports and what he's up to in the sports betting landscape. It's a great interview, and it comes your way near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Today's show is brought to you by State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, save an average of $889. State Farm agent Brian McDevitt is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Chicago and the surrounding suburbs. Call Brian today at 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or visit his website, RyanIsMyAgent.com. That's RyanIsMyAgent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. You can't hit the panic button when there's no panic. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater and claim First Amendment, freedom of speech. We know that. As I've seen Sox fans react to their 8-8 start, I can't help but draw that parallel. We have people panicking day in and day out about what the White Sox are up to, why they're 8-8, why no one's hitting, why Tony La Russa's made mistakes, why the bullpen sucks, why the starting rotation isn't consistent. I've heard it all. Everybody chiming in. The concerns are not warranted yet. You may want them to be, but they're not warranted. What do we know about this White Sox team? Seriously. Young, inexperienced, injury-riddled, and lofty expectations. When you put all of that together, what do you expect to happen? It's irresponsible to expect a 14-2 start, right? It's irresponsible to say, hey, they should be leading the division right now. Why aren't they? There's such a long way to go with this team, with this season. It's not right to sit here and nitpick everything and say, here's a problem, here's a problem. Will this get fixed? It's early. Way too early for this. Now, I'm sure many of you will say, well, John, you nitpick the Cubs all the time. Why not the White Sox? Big difference. Massive difference. The White Sox are young. This is their first year of being legitimate contenders. The Cubs are past their prime. It's over. I nitpick the Cubs because they need to move on. It's been long enough. The writing's on the wall for the White Sox. The writing is on the wall, but in a good way. I'm not seeing a breakdown I'm not seeing everyone on their roster hit under 200. I'm not seeing pitching collapse. I'm not seeing no hope for the future. That's what I see with the Cubs, not the White Sox. This stat from Patrick Nolan. The White Sox came into today's game 10th in weighted runs created plus and first in field independent pitching. It really sucks that they lost, but this is a good team. I'm hoping that this means something in the light of the years of you all yelling about me being negative. Right. The data shows that the White Sox will be a good team. There ain't Nick, too. Top performers right now, Nick Madrigal, hit it. Luis Robert, Adam Eaton, Yermin Mercedes. The rest will come. Tim Anderson, he's been hurt. When he's played, he's been good. Their big issue right now, they need Jose Abreu to go back to his MVP self. I believe that will come. Give the guy some time. Now, Lance Lynn did land on the DL, but the rotation itself is not bad. The only guy who's had trouble so far is Dallas Keuchel. Everyone else has performed. And look, even Liam Hendricks has reduced his ERA. Remember 2 weeks ago when everyone said maybe he shouldn't be the closer? Maybe he should lose his job. Big mistake by the White Sox. Too much money into the bullpen. Calm down. Calm down. There's such a long way to go in this season. And this team is talented, very talented. Entering play on Sunday, the Sox ranked 7th in baseball with 69 runs scored. They led the AL with 64 walks. And they're 8-8. The peripherals are good. The record isn't. If those peripherals stay, if the Sox can maintain those numbers and that pace, the record will come. Wins will come. That's the difference. See, there are no peripherals for the Cubs. There are no peripherals, no hope, no nothing for them. The Sox are actually producing. They're just not winning yet. Fine. Young team, inexperienced, they need to learn how to win baseball games, close games, be a winning team, instill a winning culture. That's their biggest issue right now. And that'll come in time as the season progresses. There is no need to panic. 500 baseball this early for this team, not bad. There's a long way to go. And the division is up for grabs anyway. The Royals won't be like this all year. The Royals always have a great April and then tank. Every year. The Indians have good pitching. No more Lindor. The Twins are going to be the only problem, but their power cannot be maintained. The White Sox have the best lineup, 1-9 in the division. They have good starting pitchers. When healthy, 3 top-of-the-line starters, and now Carlos Rodon has emerged as a number 4. There's a lot of good things here. We shouldn't be saying it's over, they've done nothing. Too early. Look, I know Tony La Russa has made some tactical mistakes. Putting guys when he shouldn't have. Starting Billy Hamilton, Nick Williams, I know. I get it. But why not experiment now? Why not see what you have right now in April versus September? And that's one thing I'll give Tony La Russa credit for. In a playoff game, he would not experiment with an opener. Not like Rick Renteria. He's doing it the right way. Experiment today. Learn what you have on your roster. Not his fault. Eloy Jimenez got hurt. 2 weeks before the season. It's not his fault that his MVP is hitting 200. These players need to perform and get better. Over time, they will. I'm not worried. There is nothing to panic about, trust me. This is still a dangerous lineup. They're still putting up runs. They're walking. WRC Plus is great. And they're 8-8. Imagine if they keep these numbers, keep that pace, the wins will come. And they'll be dominant. Everybody forgets. Last year, COVID year. This year, first full season for the White Sox, expected to be good. That's tough. Young team. Lots of expectations. New manager. New everything. This is different. And it's going to take some time for these guys to adjust. Good teams need to learn how to win baseball games. The best teams are the ones that win and find a way to win. The Sox have to learn that. They will, but not yet. Still early. 2 weeks in. 3 weeks in. They need to learn how to win baseball games. And they will. I trust them. But until then, they have to find their identity. They have to make improvements when necessary. And they have to get down who's going to play every day. For Tony La Russa, he's still experimenting. Still trying new things. It's April. This is the time to do it. Do you want another opener in Game 3 of a playoff series? No, you don't. No one does. That is not the time to experiment. Experiment now, win later. There's a lot of time. There's no need to hit the panic button. There's no need to nitpick and say, this team's in trouble. I know it. It's different. It's different. This is not the Cubs. This is not a team who's already passed their high point. They've yet to reach their high point. They're getting there. So there's no need to panic or be overly critical or wonder, what are they going to do? Why are they 8-8? What's wrong with the pitching and the bullpen and the hitting? Relax. Deep breath. It'll come. This team is too talented, and the peripherals are too good to suggest they're going to be bad all year, or 500 all year, even. They're scoring a lot of runs, walking a ton, good FIP. All the peripherals are extremely encouraging. Even on Baseball Reference, the Sox should be 10-6. Should be 10-6, according to their Pythagorean win-loss. Had some bad luck. It's early. Can you imagine in June or July, when everything's worked out, when guys get healthier, when there is a true left fielder, a 1-9 that's very dangerous, no Lance Lynn on the DL, Liam Hendricks being in full force. The team is too talented. You could be concerned, you could worry about where they are now, but there is so much more to come. It's wrong to panic this early. They aren't the Cubs. They aren't hitting .160 as a team. They're winning, and they're hitting. They're putting up runs. They're walking. They're doing good things at the plate. Maybe Jose Abreu hasn't performed yet. I don't see that as being permanent. Do you? That's what I thought. Luis Robert, Adam Eaton. That's been a big surprise so far. And the rotation, in my opinion, when healthy, could be one of the best in baseball. One of the deepest. Lynn, Keuchel, Giolito, Rodon, Cease. Now Kopech, who filled in, did great. Talented bullpen. There are too many good things that will outweigh any bad things people could concoct. So Sox fans, I get it. You're panicking. You're worried. You've been told by everybody this team should win the division easily and should be World Series contenders. Hey, the Sox said it themselves. We are here to win the World Series. You've been told that, and now you're worrying because they're 8-8. Don't. There's a long way left to go. And this team is young and inexperienced. They need time to grow. And they will. So until then, instead of yelling fire in a crowded movie theater and finding out there isn't one, realize that eventually this team will be where they're supposed to be. Maybe not today, maybe not next week, maybe not this month. By the end of May, June, July, they'll be fine. They'll be healthy. They'll be ready to go. That's all that matters. Think about the future and realize that even now, they aren't playing bad. They're putting up good numbers. They're doing everything right from a plate standpoint. It's just a matter of learning how to win. They're young. A lot of new guys, new faces. It's all about now experimenting and learning what it truly means and what the definition truly is of a contending baseball team. More to come on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Sam Panionovic comes up next, so stay tuned. Hey, do you want to make some money this weekend? What if I told you I could offer you $250 free dollars to bet on any game you want? Here's what you have to do. Go to sportstalkchicago.com/cash. sportstalkchicago.com/cash. Must be 21 plus. Must be an Illinois resident. You can bet $250 on any game you want for this upcoming weekend. Cubs and White Sox are back. The Bulls are going strong. And the Blackhawks are still competing for a playoff spot. This is, without question, the best time to put down some money and win a whole lot more back. At sportstalkchicago.com/cash. SportsTalkChicago.com/cash. You have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports Talk Chicago. Here with John Zaglul, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's a sports betting analyst for Nesson and Fox Sports and the host of the Chicken Dinner Podcast. Please welcome Sam Panionovic to the program. Sam, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. I'm looking out at the Massachusetts Bay. I never thought I would call Boston home, but here we are. And as we tape this, the White Sox are getting pounded by the Red Sox. So I was actually there on Saturday and Sunday. Results much better for the Southsiders, but not a good Patriots day so far.
What was your reaction to the Rodon no-hitter from last week?
I was stunned. I was one of his, you know, biggest critics when he came into the league. Well, not really when he came into the league, but, you know, a couple of years through, it was always something with him. You know, he was always, you know, a little banged up, or he didn't have control, or he was in and out of the weight room. And just like he was never really locked in to what he was doing. And this is a guy who was a top five pick and had so much potential and such good stuff. Like his fastball slider combo coming into college out of North Carolina State was exceptional. And he just never really lived up to the potential. So this year has been really a redemption story for him. And I think more than any other year, he realized he had something to prove. I think a lot of times he got by with just talent, and you can do that, but you won't succeed at a high level over a long period of time with that. And I think him being non-tendered in this offseason, this past offseason, I think it's sort of, you know, to use a cliche, it sort of lit a fire under him, and he's been prepared. He looks like he's in shape, and whatever he's doing is working. So it's cool to see somebody that had such a high level of, you know, hope and promise. It's cool to see him succeed and throw a no-hitter in a baseball game. And it's something that I think, you know, goes to show you that, you know, this sport is very humbling. You come in and you're a high draft pick and you have the whole world in front of you, and you do struggle and you do get hurt sometimes. And I think it's how you bounce back that really counts. And you have to tip your cap to what he did.
Do you think it's sustainable moving forward, this new performance for him and this new attitude and all of this stuff that he's been doing very well?
I think the attitude certainly is. A lot of times that can be half the battle for a lot of people. I mean, we've seen so many players that had, you know, gobs of talent that just never really gave a damn. And I'm not going to put him in that category, but this is a small sample size. I mean, a guy had an 8.22 ERA last year. For him to completely overturn that and go gangbusters for a full season, I mean, obviously he'll probably never throw another no-hitter again. The numbers are certainly against him. But you look at what he's done in 14 innings, 16 strikeouts and 3 walks. If he keeps doing that, he could be a very good, you know, three or four pitcher in a major league rotation. And, you know, when you look at, you know, his age, he's only 28. So, you know, if he stays healthy and stays up on his P's and Q's, he could throw another 5, 6, 7 years in this league. I think we're long past the point of him being an ace or even a two, but he could be a very serviceable three or four on a good team.
Sam Pantianovich, you're on Sports Talk Chicago. Sam, what's your evaluation of the White Sox in general so far?
It's been a roller coaster, man. I mean, I think without the results, first and foremost, it's a very exciting team. You turn on the game and you walk away for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you're going to probably miss something. And their offense is just very, very good. And I think we knew that going into the season, but the question was going to be with the pitching, you know, like, is the pitching good or is the pitching great? I think it's been good-ish. I don't think it's been great yet across the board. And I think really what's interesting is the way that Tony La Russa has managed and controlled his bullpen. I think he's made some questionable moves so far. There have been games where he's put the wrong guy in several times. And I think that kind of gives me PTSD thinking back to Ricky Renteria, because that way he was the best in baseball picking the wrong guy. You know, he'd bring in a righty and the righty would give up walk, double, homer. And you'd be like, wow, I can't believe that just happened. But he did that more times than I think many people even remembered. I think the other problem that a lot of White Sox fans are having is defensively, this team has shown some flaws. Nick Madrigal has made some mistakes at second base. We've seen left field be an issue. And that's even, you know, after Eloy Jimenez went on. He was not good in the outfield last year. I mean, they have a couple really good defensive players. I like Grandal behind the plate a lot. I really like Luis Robert in center. But they've been fumbling and kicking the baseball around. And, you know, for all the talk about offense and home runs and Yermin Mercedes hitting balls that haven't landed yet, if this team is serious about winning and they want to win in the postseason, they have to shore up this defense and the pitching has to be better.
Who should be in left field, in your opinion?
It's a really good question. Andrew Vaughn makes the most sense because of his bat and I think his potential. Problem is, he's not a left fielder. But I don't know that they really have a true left fielder. And I think, you know, sometimes in Chicago, we get so wrapped up in how well the White Sox have grown over the last 4 years. And we give Rick Hahn all this credit. But team depth is an issue. I mean, we've seen that when Tim Anderson went out, you're playing Danny Mendick at shortstop. When Eloy goes down with a torn pec, they don't have an answer in left field. And I don't think Tony La Russa knows. So, I mean, at this point in time, I think you can – left field is a position where you can sort of stash a guy. I mean, Manny Ramirez played left field for a long time in Major League Baseball. So, if you hit, I think it overrides your inefficiencies on defense. But that being said, if you're Andrew Vaughn and you get to play, you know, 4 or 5 times a week in left field, you got to hit the ball. You know, you can't hit under 200. So, there are a lot of growing pains for a young baseball player, and Vaughn's going through that right now. But I'd much rather see him out there than Leury Garcia or, you know, whatever else they've been throwing out there. It's a tough spot. But I think Vaughn, more times than not, should get the reps, and he needs the at-bats. That's what's most important. I don't know that he's the best left fielder defensively, but I think he's the best well-rounded option, at least at this point.
Tactically, has Tony La Russa done a good job to you?
I think it's an incomplete at this point in time. I mean, it's still early in the season. It's a very small sample size. I mean, they haven't even played 20 games yet. I think his bullpen management, like I said, has been a little questionable. But by all accounts, it looks like the team is taking a liking to him. So I don't think it's anything wrong as far as, like, respect or control or any of that. Like, he seems to sort of make the lineup and stay out of the way. My favorite part about, you know, White Sox fans and White Sox Twitter, every time the lineup comes out, there's a problem. You know, I mean, it's been this way. It's been this way for years. Whoever's playing, he could hit 9 Hall of Famers in the lineup and people would still have a problem. Like, oh, you should have hit this guy second or this guy fifth or whatever. At the end of the day, the players are going to be way more important than any lineup card. And I think when you look at some of the struggles, you know, Jose Abreu has not been playing well this year. And that's a guy who's one of 4 or 5 guys that really has to carry the mail. I mean, when you think about the White Sox, you're talking about Moncada, Abreu, you know, Anderson was hurt for a little bit. You know, those are the guys. Eloy Jimenez is out of the lineup. So those are like 4 of your most important players. 2 of them missed ample time and 2 of them aren't playing well. So until those guys sort of turn things around, and I think they will, it's only April. I mean, there's a long way to go in this season. I think until the players take care of business, it's really hard to grade La Russa. I mean, C plus, B minus, but there's room for both, you know, progression and regression there as far as grading him.
Realistically, if everything goes according to plan, how far do the Sox go this year?
Well, they could still win the division. I mean, I don't think it's a very, you know, I don't think it's a very tough division to win. There's no super team in the division. I mean, the Kansas City Royals are in first right now, and they're playing almost 65% baseball, which I don't think is sustainable. The Twins have been struggling. Their offense hasn't been what it's been in the last couple of years. And the Indians have a couple really good pitchers, but I think they're masking a lot of their inefficiencies. So this division, I mean, this could be one of those 90-win divisions. I wouldn't be surprised one bit. And I expect the White Sox, with 2 weeks to go, to be in a push for first place one way or the other. You get to the postseason, I do like their rotation, and I like the back end of their bullpen. But I need La Russa to understand when you get into the postseason, and I think he should know this, and he knows a lot more than I do, obviously. Let your starters go. You know, that was such an issue last year with Ricky. Like, he was so quick on the chain to yank a guy out. You need that 1-2-3, Giolito, Keuchel, and Lance Lynn, assuming they're all healthy. They need to go 6-7 innings. And they have the ability to do that. They have shown that. They're very economical. They get through jams. They're very serviceable. You know, I don't like the middle relief, but I think sometimes you have to let your starters go a little bit longer. With that rotation, that 1-2-3, you have the potential to bring Kopech and Garrett Crochet in the 6th or 7th, and then you have Bummer and Liam Hendricks in the 8th and the 9th. It's a very good, you know, start and a very good end. As long as those starters can go 6-7 innings or so, I think this team can do, you know, realistically anything. If they win the World Series, I wouldn't be stunned. If they get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs, I don't think I'd be stunned either. The baseball playoffs are a gauntlet. They're a crapshoot. It's really whoever's hot at the right time, barring last year with the Dodgers. I mean, they were the best team. We all knew that. I think that, you know, the ceiling is the World Series and the floor is a first-round bounce.
Sam Pandianovich here on Sports Talk Chicago. Sam, let's talk Bears now. What was your reaction to the Andy Dalton signing?
I just laughed, honestly. I mean, you know, even the Cowboys knew he was bad. The Cowboys are like, yeah, we saw enough. I don't know. I think there's just, yeah, this Bears front office is so stubborn. And, you know, they think that they have a 10-11 win football team. And I think when you look at some of the numbers across some of these football win totals, because that's my life now, I'm pretty much analyzing numbers and trying to figure out what they mean and what the trends are. You know, the Bears win total right now at a couple sports books is 7.5. And that's not good, especially when you consider that they're playing 17 regular season games this year. So Vegas is saying essentially they're a 7-8 win team. They'll be under 500 again, and they're average. And the problem with this offense is that you're relying on a guy who hasn't been good in multiple years to sort of carry the load with a very bad offensive line. You know, Allen Robinson is a really good receiver, but there's really not much depth at wide receiver. And, you know, David Montgomery, he's had issues staying on the field. So, you know, I think the quarterback here is put in a position to fail, not to succeed. Andy Dalton, you know, he completed a lot of passes last year, 65%, but he was not a threat. He was certainly not a downfield threat. 14 touchdowns, 8 picks. Like, he's just an average quarterback. It's a Band-Aid on a cut when the cut needs stitches. I mean, they didn't fix this long-term. The problem is they have built a defense that is literally ready to win right now. You know, you have all of these defensive players, like, that are getting near the wrong side of 30. You think about Hicks and Khalil Mack and Danny Trevathan. A lot of these guys, you know, they're not going to put together Pro Bowl caliber years that much longer. So the front office is so stuck. They mortgaged the future when they traded for Mack, which started the clock, the championship clock. And the championship clock is almost over. And they're desperate now. So they're going to a veteran who they think can win them games. Whatever. Like, they have no shot against the elite. I don't like them in a game against the Chiefs. I don't like them in a game against the Buccaneers, against the Packers, against the Bills. The Bears they're an average football team, and they've been one for almost a decade now. It's frustrating, honestly.
Should they have just kept Nick Foles and made him the starter versus actually pay money to Dalton?
they were in such a weird spot, and it's their own fault. Yeah, I mean, they're the same guy. I think, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know who's pulling the trigger anymore. You know, obviously Ryan Pace brings in Matt Nagy, and Ryan Pace drafted Mitch Trubisky. So it was sort of an unfair marriage out of the get-go. I never really thought that Nagy liked Mitch Trubisky as a starting quarterback, but he did with him what he had to. And I think the worst thing, honestly, for the Bears franchise the last 10 years was that team winning 12 games with Trubisky. That was the worst, because it was sort of smoke and mirrors, but it gave the front office more time, and it gave ownership this jolt of belief, like, oh, maybe we are good now. You know, 12-4, made the playoffs. Let's see how we build off this. That was one of those weird years. It was just one of those weird football years where, you know, a lot of times a division's up for grabs, and a team with a really good defense, they win the division. And that's what happened that year. But they were also completely healthy in almost every position on defense. So after they split from Trubisky and they brought in Foles, that was Nagy's guy, but clearly that didn't work out. It's amazing that the biggest joke around Chicago football is, well, the best quarterback ever is Sid Luckman. And, you know, from a winning side and a statistical side, it's hard to argue that. I mean, they had Jay, who had a bunch of talent. Cutler was a very talented quarterback, but I don't think he was the best quarterback by any means. But here we are in 2021. We've been talking about the Bears quarterback and how they've been a quarterback away since 1985. And it's just, I don't know how they fix it. I don't think they know how to scout and develop the position. And that's the position you need to win. I mean, look at the NFC and AFC championship games last year. You had four, you know, very good quarterbacks, and that's what you need. I believe it was Rodgers, Brady, Mahomes, and Josh Allen. There's a common denominator there, a quarterback that can change the game with his arm and with his legs and that knows what he's doing. And the Bears don't have that guy still.
Should they draft a quarterback at number 20?
They should, but they won't. I mean, they have so many other holes. You know, I mean, I think of anything, they need to develop this offensive line. But this is the problem when you're like we already have discussed, when you have a defense that is aging. I mean, this defense reminds me a lot of that 2011, 2012 Bears defense, when it was sort of the end of Urlacher and Briggs and Tillman. They knew what they had, but they knew the window was sort of closing. And when you're built to win at one side of the football, you have to sort of make a bunch of dinky dunk moves to sort of get you through on that side. And that's where they're at right now. They're trying to do eight different things at once. They're trying to sustain this defense, which is aging and not getting any younger, with a quarterback who's been awful for 3 years, with an offensive line that's been sort of patched together, and wide receivers that are okay but not great. So it's a weird mess, you know, and I don't think that there's an easy solution. Like, the Bears are not one player away. You know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year were one player away. They needed a quarterback, and they went from Jameis Winston to Tom Brady. Look what happened. You know, the Bears, even if they draft a quarterback, or they sign a quarterback that actually has a pulse, you know, like people were talking about even maybe making a trade for Teddy Bridgewater or Marcus Mariota. Like, those guys aren't going to save the Chicago Bears. The Bears are going to win with defense, but the defense only has a couple years left as an aggregate group. So it's a weird spot. It's almost like the Bears are in football hell because they have so many things to fix, but so little time and so little assets.
Is it time to just tear it down and move on?
It was time to tear it down 2 years ago, yeah. But I think keeping Ryan Pace around, the last thing Ryan Pace wants to do is tear it down, because if he starts to tear it down, then it's like, all right, well, how many cracks does he actually get at this? You know, like, a general manager should not get 2-3 times at a rebuild. You know, like, he's already done all that heavy lifting, and he didn't really rebuild, man. I mean, he mortgaged the future a couple times. I mean, he made some shrewd trades, and, you know, he made some big acquisitions like the Mac one and the Allen Robinson one. You know, he made some ballsy moves, but I think the lack of depth has really hurt this team. Problem is, if he decides to throw the white flag up and, you know, rebuild again, ownership's going to be like, no, dude, we're going to get somebody else. So it's so weird, the posturing inside the organization. Everybody has a different agenda. Ryan Pace trying to keep his job. Matt Nagy's trying to find the right quarterback. Andy Dalton's trying to get a paycheck. You know, like, I don't think anybody's on the same page. I don't think anybody is.
Do you have any hope right now?
No, not really. I mean, if we're being honest, no, I don't. I mean, you know, somebody asked me the other day for a story on Fox, like, well, you're a Chicago guy, but now you live in New England. Who do you like more this year, you know, coming up to 2021? I said, well, the Patriots, clearly. You know, you get Belichick, who's like the Terminator, especially off a bad season. Like, that guy's going to spend money, and he's going to find a way to make it work. He's a tremendous football coach. And, you know, the Patriots should win 9, 10, 11 games. Chicago could win 6, 7 football games. And I think, you know, if you had to make me make a betting line on, like, what's the most realistic number, I'd say that's the range. I'd say they're a 6, 7-win football team with a ceiling of 9 or 10. And that 9 or 10 isn't as strong as it was last year because of the extra regular season game. They're not good, man. And there's a lot of people in Chicago that won't say that, but that's the truth. They're not a good football team.
More to come with Sam Panionovich in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is Sports Talk Chicago. Sam Panionovich, still here on Sports Talk Chicago. Sam, a few more questions before we finish up. First off, your new roles at NESN and Fox Sports, how'd they come up?
Well, a year ago today, I was out of work looking for work. And we're also, remember, we're, you know, early pandemic where we thought, all right, this is going to last maybe a couple weeks or a month or so. And and we're all going to go back to normal. And obviously nobody saw the curveball that was coming. And we're still living in it, which is unfortunate. It looks like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. But I mean, I was actually about to move to Boston in April of 2020. Like, that was the original plan, to take the job at NESN. And, you know, once the pandemic hit, everybody went into either a hiring freeze or a holding pattern. And it was just, there was nothing you could do. It was out of your control. And I think a lot of peers in the business have lost work or have had to do other things. You know, I was teaching class and tending bar and all that. I remember we did a Super Bowl show with you, and I took, you know, 20 minutes away from my class. I'm like, yeah, all right, everybody go to lunch, you know, and I did that from from the classroom. So, I mean, these were all possibilities, but they didn't really come to fruition until around Christmas time of 2020. So it all worked out. As we know, sports betting is a bear and it's not going anywhere. And the handles from around the country are insane every single month. I mean, New Jersey just took $850 million in wagered bets last month. That's a lot of money. And now there are almost 30 states that have legalized. They're live and running in about 21, 22. So this is an industry that is slowly taking over. I mean, for years, the breadwinners for sporting leagues and teams were the beer and the alcohol companies. You know, the Miller Lite, the Bud Light, the Smirnoff, like all these different brands. Those were the brands that were helping a lot of sports teams make a lot of money because they spent big money on advertising. Gambling is going to bring even more money in. And Ted Leonsis was on this conference call about 6 weeks ago, and he said, yeah, we have seen the shift already. It's getting to that point already where sports betting companies and sports betting revenue dollars are more important already with means to making money than the alcohol and the beer. And sports betting was just essentially legalized in May of 2018. It hasn't even been 3 full years yet. And executives who know what they're doing clearly see the dollar signs, and this thing isn't going anywhere.
Well, you've been very early to this space, too. I mean, I remember back in 2017, 2018, you were already pivoting into this space. What compelled you to do that?
I wanted to turn a hobby into a career. I didn't know it would explode the way that it did. You know, when I started doing Chicken Dinner with Joe Ostrowski in 2016, we did that show for 2 years together, and then he got an opportunity. I ended up moving to Vegas. Like, we didn't know what was going to come. We knew that it would be popular, but we didn't know that it was going to be, you know, an explosion into the space. I just thought that, you know, it was interesting when, you know, radio executives and like your bosses or whatever would say, yeah, we don't really want to talk gambling. And I used to always say, well, one day you're going to need gambling. The money that comes into the space, people gamble, John, they do. They like to throw, even if it's 10, 15, 20, 25 bucks on a football game or a parlay, they like to do it. You know, I've always said that I would rather bet $20 on a football game than go to a movie and, you know, buy a ticket for 12 and a popcorn for 8 and a soda for 5, because I spent $25 on this movie. I pretty much know what's going to happen halfway through, and I don't even have a chance to win any money. Like, I'm burning the money, and the movie might suck. So if I can throw $20 on a football game, have no idea what's going to happen, even with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter of a football or basketball game, and if the bet wins, I actually win $20. So that's much more entertainment for me. It's much more exciting. And I think sports are so sporadic and so unpredictable. Like, I know who killed the villain halfway through the movie. I don't know what Jay Cutler or Mitch Trubisky or Nick Foles are going to do with 5 minutes to go. And I think that's the best part about it, the unknown, the uncertainty.
What's been the best part about working at NESN and Fox Sports so far?
I think the belief in the space. I think I have bosses in both places that understand that this thing is here to stay and it's not going anywhere. And they also both give me the creative freedom. You know, there have been many meetings I've been in over the last 2 years where, all right, we want to do our locks of the day and our lead pipe locks of the week. And I'm like, we ain't doing that. That ain't happening. There's no such thing as lock. But, you know, the crazy thing about sports betting is a lot of people are in now positions of sports betting power inside companies. They're running traffic, they're running content, and they want this, that, this. And those three things might not be paramount to what matters in the space. I think it's important to have, you know, a managing team and a boss that understand but are also pliable and understanding and that are trying to learn with you. Because, you know, a lot of people think they know everything, and they don't. And I think we're all sort of figuring out on the fly together, both at NESN and Fox. We're building strategies. We're trying to, you know, drum up interest and figure out exactly how to attack the space, because it's brand new. You know, nobody knows how to do sports betting media the right way, because there is no right way, because there hasn't been a right way. This is all relatively new, but I think the companies that are understanding, the ones that sort of make moves, and the ones that are flexible and stick with what works instead of trying to just kind of stick to their guns, I think it's the ones that are adaptable and, like I said, pliable. I think those are the companies that are going to be the best ones. And by all accounts, NESN is very understanding. We're doing sports betting columns, you know, 5-6 days a week on the website. We're doing hits and pregame shows. We're going to do some postgame stuff pretty soon. And that's for the Bruins and Red Sox games. I mean, you turn on a Boston Bruins game and you're on the pregame show and you're like, wow, they're talking sports betting. There aren't many regional networks in the country that are doing that. They have some stuff on ESPN, but that's a national company with the Daily Wager show. But I think the companies that understand it and are the most flexible, those are going to be the ones that are going to lead the space.
And Sam, before we finish up today, last question. What's your problem with Jock Peterson?
There's no personal problem. I just think he dresses like the best player and he's hitting the buck 08 or whatever. You know, and you know, I love to throw shots at both sides. You know, like last year, I was attacking Renteria almost every other game, but I always throw it both ways. You know, and then it's always funny when you like you throw a tweet out or you make a critique of the Cub fans. The first thing they do is bring up the White Sox. It's like they always act like they don't care. They're like, oh, nobody cares about the White Sox, and then you send out an anti-Cub tweet or like a critiquing Cub tweet, and they go nuts about, oh, the White Sox lost today. Like, nobody cares. Nobody's bringing the White Sox into this conversation but you, jilted Cub fan. But no, I mean, I just put a picture up. I'm watching the game the other day against the Braves, and I got the screenshot right here. Jock Peterson's hitting 105, but he's got sunglasses, an elbow pad, a shin guard, 2 leg compression sleeves, a thumb protector, and the killer is the extra batting gloves hanging out of his back pocket. Like, you aren't hitting that well to look that cool. And that was pretty much the point. Yeah, you look like Barry Bonds, but you play like, you know, some average, you know, fourth outfielder. And that was all the tweet was. And it took off. I thought it was pretty funny. It's just like, look, man, until you get over 200 in the batting average, you probably should take off some of that gear. Maybe it's weighing you down a little bit.
Quick last question. What's your best Twitter roast of a fan that you've done?
My best Twitter roast?
Yes.
Oh, man. I don't know. I had a couple really good ones with the White Sox had a player named Cody Ash or Cody Ashy. He was so bad I didn't remember how to say his name, but I take full credit for the White Sox actually like cutting him. This was back in 2016. I started a hashtag, will Cody Ashy get a hit today? And I think he started the season like 1-for-29 and they kept playing him. And it wasn't really a roast. It was just, I can't believe this guy's in the major leagues. It wasn't like, it's never personal. Like it's never anything like, I don't like this person. It's just, you're paid a lot of money to perform. And if you don't, like my job is to critique you. And it's like, I'm never trying to tear down anybody, you know, from a personal standpoint. It's all performance based and I'm equal opportunity, man. But I think us single-handedly almost getting Cody Ashy cut back in 2016, that's probably a pretty prominent moment in the roast life.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for joining me. Always a pleasure to catch up and talk Chicago sports, and best wishes to you at the new endeavors with Nesson and Fox Sports. You do great work. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. Keep up the good work, John.
Great talk there with Sam Panayanovich, and that'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Sam Panayanovich himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalb, and Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes your way tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe. So long, everyone.
No! No! Here are the turtles!